Gucker, and I cordially welcome you to my podcast, Neue Musik Leben. I have studied classical singing, and I'm still singing classical music, but also so much contemporary music and performance and multimedia, whatever there is. If you would like to know more about me, please look at my website, www.irenekurk.de. I will put this into the show notes for you. You could also subscribe to my monthly newsletter, and I also invite you to subscribe to this podcast here because it supports my work and it makes the podcast more visible. And yes, this podcast is now really listened worldwide, which I'm really excited about, that there are people out there, probably very far from me also, and you're interested in new music and you're interested how I approach this and how I talk with people about new music, their being, and how we share with you the behind the scenes, the insider knowledge, and yeah, that I really like to bring you the human beings out of the new music world so much closer. I'm very thankful for all the emails and feedbacks I receive from you. And I'm cooperating with the NMZ, that is the Neue Musikzeitung, which is one of the most important German music papers, or a paper in a German language. Yes, let's put it that way. In today's episode, I talk with the young composer Joey Tan. She's from Singapore, but she's now being for a while already in Freiburg, Germany. And yeah, it's also a very open, interesting talk about her work, about Singapore, about Germany, about living abroad. There is so much in it. So please enjoy the interview with Joey Tan. Hello, Joey. Hello, Joey Tan. I cordially welcome you into my podcast, Neue Musik Leben.
Thank you very much for having me here.
Yeah, I'm really excited. You are a young composer and dancer who came from Singapore and you're living in Freiburg right now. We will find out a lot about you, but my first question is, how did you find your way into new and experimental music?
Yes, okay, so this is actually quite a funny question, and I also have a funny answer. It was kind of like a coincidence or a mistake. So when I was 18 or 19, I finished my A-levels in Singapore, and I actually studied mostly the science subjects. So I took physics, chemistry, mathematics, and you have to do one contrasting subject. For me, that was music. And so I got some scholarships to study like engineering and science, and I thought that I was going to do that. My parents as well. And somehow at the last moment, I realized, no, I think I want to study music. And so I decided to do that. But I learned the piano and clarinet, but I couldn't play either well. I would always get stage fright, and you know, everything would go wrong on stage. And so composition was the only other choice. So I thought, okay, since I want to study music, I'll kind of study composition. And that's studying music as well. But at the start, I had no interest in composition. I was kind of like a lazy student. But I had really good teachers who, you know, who would encourage me and not give up on me. And there were two pieces that I heard that kind of opened my ears, opened my head. The first one was Kagel's Acoustica. I remember hearing a performance of that when I was in my first year of my bachelor's studies, and although I don't remember at all how it sounds like, and I think the piece is also quite open, I remember that it left a very strong impression on me, and I was like, what, this is how music can be. And the second piece that did that for me was Pression by Helmut Lachenmann. I found it incredibly beautiful, that, you know, like all these quiet sounds that can be produced and produced with so much care. So these two pieces kind of opened my head and opened my mind. And then I became more curious and started putting in more effort. And composing more, and I guess I'm here now.
Great, great. There are so many interesting points you touched on. I mean, the thing with the science, I found fascinating because I have been one of those two. I was very good at math and physics, and but I also decided for music. My sister actually became the teacher for math and physics, even though she also was always talented with music, but that's the road she took. And I find there are always musicians who are either also good at all this science stuff or where you have to use your brain in a certain way, and some musicians who totally don't like it. And it's always a f interesting correlation I find. And the other thing is that I find interesting that life somehow pushed you into composition. I mean, well, the choice with science you made, but that the stage fright pushed you, okay, just become a composer. And I can also relate to that because I was first playing the piano, and I was at like a music high school, so I had a very good piano teacher and very good piano lessons. But I started with like 11, and I thought I would become a pianist. And so after a few lessons, I talked to my piano teacher and I said, well, I want to become a pianist. And he looked at me and he's like, Irene, forget it. There are other kids who started with five. You will never be as good as them. So that was first like hard. But the other thing I realized as well was we had to perform and had like class concerts and so on. And my hands were always really trembling hard when I was playing the piano. And I realized the other pianists didn't have that problem. So I also thought, okay, even though I really like this instrument, I probably should not do it. And with singing, it was the opposite. My knees could tremble, but my voice was always clear and strong. And so I was like, okay, I should become a singer.
Well, it's totally true what you say. Like, I really couldn't have imagined that, I started studying composition less than 8 years ago. I couldn't have imagined that I would be here speaking to you in Germany in Freiburg, and like, what? But for
Yes,
me, it's
you're.
also similar. Like, I'm also a dancer, and with being on stage for dance, I love it. I have no stage fright. It just gives me energy. But for piano and clarinet, that was.
Yeah, and already watched your movies. I mean, your dancing is so beautiful and so delicate and sensitive.
Thank
And
you.
you talked about Singapore. So you did your bachelor there, and how is the training in Singapore for music or for composition?
Yes, I did my bachelor's in Singapore. I studied with Professor Peter Ivan Edwards for 3 years and then Martin Yagi for 1 year. It's funny, we have a conservatory in Singapore and the focus is on Western classical music, but that's usually the kind of musical education that we get there. Being situated in Southeast Asia, but we were once a colony of the British, so it's interesting for me. For instance, my mother tongue is English. Although I'm Chinese, I'm so bad at Chinese, it's actually quite funny. And then I started things like classical ballet at 3 years old, classical piano at 6, 7. Yeah, so the training is mostly like the Western system, but at the same time very far removed from the roots. So for instance, the first time I heard an organ was when I was 22 years old, when I was on exchange in Europe. And the first time I heard a cowbell on a cow was when I came to Freiburg. I was hiking near Todtnau, and it's so crazy because I imagine for other people, they grow up listening to the cowbells as part of the cow, but I hear it in a totally different context when the cowbell has already been taken out and used, whatever, in the
It's
composed context.
interesting that you have our classical music in your training, but do you also then learn about your original music from Singapore or from Asia or anything, or have you gotten in touch with it?
Honestly, I don't know. Singapore is such a melting pot of different cultures, and I'm starting to understand and to realize this because when you are inside, you just see all these signs, symbols, and perhaps you understand subconsciously that they are very different, that they have a lot of meaning behind them. But at the same time, you don't know, you never know where the roots are. Singapore is such, is so small, and it's also an issue with things like conservation because it's so small, we always have to tear down old buildings to make new ones that, which are taller and, you know, can house more people. So it's like having a computer with just 2 gigabytes of data. You keep having to delete old stuff to make space for the new. But of course, then some things get lost, some of the roots, you don't know where they come from. And of course, then we have some music here as well, whatever. Chinese music or Indonesian music or Malay music, Indian music. But somehow it doesn't feel closer to me than Western classical music. It's really strange. And I think it's also the case with food. You know, you have so much aesthetics in the food that you eat and you eat it's normal. But the roots and the histories are somehow really far away, and that's a mystery also for me.
So when you're in Germany, do you eat Asian food or you cook, I don't know, Italian?
I just cook what's cheap as a student.
Because I find this food topic also kind of interesting. I mean, I studied 3 years in Dallas, Texas, my bachelor, and 2 years in Vancouver, Canada. And when I arrived, at first I really missed all the things we had in Germany, like bread or dairy products who are more fatty. Everything was low fat. But the thing was, after a while, I forgot about it because I found other things. Then I ate bagels or in Dallas. I also liked the Tex-Mex food. And when I came to Vancouver, there's, I mean, you know that there's also lots of Asian community, so I got to eat sushi and Indian food, and I was really happy. And in the end, when I decided to return to Europe, it was not the food. I didn't care about the food anymore because I found other great food. That's fine. But I really missed old stuff because North America has destroyed most of the old stuff, whatever the Indian stuff. And so the churches are for European always new. They build it after our churches in Europe. And so when I went back, I really wanted to go back to have whatever old stones around me. And in Nuremberg, where I grew up, is a very medieval town. And that really made me happy to come back to my roots. And so it's always interesting what you miss or don't miss when you're a different place, like in Freiburg.
Yeah, I guess it's I also try to make use of my time here or wherever, you know, to take the opportunities wherever I am. So when I'm in Singapore, I eat the food there. When I'm here, I enjoy Spätzle and Flammkuchen and stuff. But I think it's really the case, you know, they always say that the grass is greener on the other side, and everyone tells me that, you know, oh, you come from Singapore, it's like science fiction there. And for me it's like, you know, I grew up with this, it's normal, but then at the same time, I'm in love with the stuff that I see here because it's so old. Like, wow, there are churches that are hundreds of years old, there are these historical buildings. I can't believe that. So, for me, I'm not so interested in the science fiction buildings that Singapore has.
And so when you came then for your master's to Freiburg, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. I came in September 2020. 2020.
Okay. And so how did it come that you decide to come to Germany? And I mean, you probably also learned the language, I assume.
Yes, I started learning the language in, I think, August 2018. How is it that I came to Germany? Well, my teachers had also studied in Germany, so I was able to find out a bit, or I knew a bit about that from them. I also worked at that time with an ensemble from Switzerland. They are the Ensemble Phoenix Basel. They came on a trip to Singapore to play some student pieces, and we got to know one another. And they actually invited me to Basel to work with them to take part in their Trabant, competition. And I did that, and that was like kind of my first small thing in Europe. And then I went on exchange to the Netherlands, and then I was also in a bit in Germany for a bit. And I guess also in contemporary music, there are so many German composers, so I thought it must be Germany. I should go there to see what it's like. And yeah, I learned German, I learned the language, and I applied to study in Germany. But not just the new music, also whatever, Beethoven, Schumann. Not all of them are German, some of them Austrian, but also German-speaking lands. So that was my language of choice.
And would you say there is a difference in the education between Freiburg and Singapore?
Oh, it's very different, I think. Well, it's not just the education. Of course, there are also big differences between a bachelor's degree and a master's degree. I think the master's degree is a lot more free. And the education by itself is also very important. But also, what's incredibly important for me is the things surrounding the education. So, for instance, the pace of life in Singapore is so fast. I still haven't figured out why. But it feels like time passes really quickly. And I feel like in Germany, it's much, much, much slower, although it's the same 24 hours. In that sense, I feel like I have a lot more time to compose in Germany. That helps me a lot. Time to just, sometimes also to just do nothing, to let the thoughts kind of ferment in your head. And also, Germany has a lot more concerts and cultural offerings, museums than Singapore, and those things are also incredibly important, I think, for studying composition.
Yeah, it's I wonder if it's the thing with the fastness, if it's the Singapore thing, or if it's, as you mentioned, maybe also the bachelor thing or something. When I went to Dallas, Texas, and did my bachelor there, I at first I was so overwhelmed because I was at so many classes, and the difference to my German education was also, when we did the Abitur, the final degree of high school, they were always like, whatever, you have a math exam and then you have 2 weeks nothing, and then there is whatever the exam for Latin. And so we all would then, whatever, practice 2 weeks for the math exam and then 2 weeks for the Latin exam and so on. And when I was then at the bachelor at SMU, there was everything at once. I had like tests every week, whatever, in three subjects, and I had to turn in two papers and this. And I thought like, I'm never gonna make it. And then I watched all the Americans, and they seemed to do it. I mean, I'm not sure. I've never asked them, but it seemed like they knew how to play this game. So I thought like, okay, if they can do it, I still have to figure it out. And then I started. I'm a person who's very good in taking little steps. So I would split my free time. Okay, 30 minutes writing on paper, 30 minutes whatever, doing oral skills, 30 minutes practicing my voice. So I was very, very structured. And this is what got me through. And this is, I think, where I really learned about time management, which now, I mean, you know, I'm freelancing. I mean, I have obligations, but I can kind of sometimes decide how I use my time, but I still put in the structure to get things done. And so I'm not sure. What do you think? Is it really the Singapore lifestyle, or is it more the bachelor?
I think it's both. And it actually is really interesting to hear what you said, because for me, it's, you know, I grew up with this, like being moving quickly and studying a lot, so it's normal to me. But what I actually had to learn was when I came here to kind of to slow down and to wait. Sometimes you don't get an idea from squeezing your head, your brain harder. You don't get better perspectives from banging your head harder against the wall. Sometimes you have to just wait, and wait doesn't mean that you are being lazy or you're not working. You're working also subconsciously, or go for a walk, or just go to the sauna. And you know, sometimes composing is also just waiting or making some space in your head. so that you can grab the ideas which are in the air. But anyway, back to Singapore, I think it's both. I was thinking also maybe it's, you know, noise pollution because it's so dense. You always have some sounds in the background. I think that makes it harder to think or harder to be peaceful, and maybe that's what makes time pass faster, but I don't know. I still find that the pace of life is faster in Singapore. Also, when I'm back just to visit my family, not to study, not to work, it's still faster.
Oh, wow. I've been actually like 3 days to Singapore, but I did not grab this feeling. I was there probably way too short. That's the only place I've been in Asia yet, long time ago. And I find it interesting that Germany... I was accompanying someone who was there at a music fair, and he wanted me to translate. So something completely different. I was translating English. He was German, but it was great. I saw some of the different areas and how different. Yeah, it's cool. And I had a duck on some street corn to eat. And it's interesting that Germany made you slow down, because I think Germans probably wouldn't think that we are able to slow down, because we often think the Asians, they also whatever meditate and all this, and you come here. And also I find it interesting because I think for me it took me a really long time to let go of this doing and really just let thing happening more, because I mean you cannot pull on the grass that it grows faster. But I think I've been doing that for long. And I mean, you're young and you already got all this wisdom. So I'm impressed.
I don't know. I was about to say, I think it comes with age, but I don't know.
So when you work with performers, what qualities do you appreciate most in them?
I really like performers who are open and who are curious. It doesn't matter to me if they are not so skilled, because I've also had the opportunities, of course, to work with students. Last year, for instance, I was in France from end of August to early September by the Ravel Academy, Ravel Festival. And there, a piece of mine was played by some students, and of course, they didn't have so much experience with new music and the funny things that I asked them to do. Not so funny, but still new. And they played it okay, but I remember telling the composition professor that, you know, it's the first time maybe that they play new music. So if they even take the smallest step and they find something new for themselves, I'm quite happy about that. And I think it's this openness and curiosity that helps them to move forward with learning a piece. What else? I also do quite like performers who can express what they find beautiful as well. Like in the process of working on a piece, maybe it's not just always about the music, but they make reference to, oh yeah, this wonderful poem that I know by someone else, or I once had this experience where I don't know, I was with a friend on the mountain and we saw this wonderful sunset which lasted for 20 minutes, and they try and explain something about whatever they found beautiful in that moment. And I really like that. It inspires me as well. Performers who don't try to play everything too perfectly and correctly who also, you know, push me a bit and I push them, and we see if we can find something that we both did not think of.
Yeah. Yeah, you let go and trust also. And I also like this point that you kind of like to know what we also think and feel, and that it inspires you, and then you whatever have a spiral of inspiration. And it's great. I also like that this I think I also have been quite lucky already that I worked with many composers who are very also open and want the dialogue. But I know that in the much older times, oftentimes there was like a hierarchy and the composer was the smart one and we just were the interpreters. But I like this if something develops together. Yeah, it's great. And so how do your friends and family, colleagues, etc., react to your music? I mean, how did your family react that you're writing contemporary music?
I don't know if they fully understand what it is I do, but maybe I don't either. I guess at the start they didn't really understand. And you know, being at that age, I was also not so mature to be able to express or to explain or to be able to bring them closer to what I'm doing. But my parents have been very supportive and open as well. Like, they've been to a few of my concerts, even if they don't understand what is going on. I think they come because I have a piece or something like that, which is really nice. I appreciate that. And last year, my mother, who is currently 54, she started learning piano, which is actually, I think, a childhood dream of hers. She couldn't afford it when she was young. But I've seen, and I think it's really, really beautiful, something that touches me. When I see her sit at the piano and try to play Für Elise through without making a mistake, and she doesn't read notes or whatever, but she plays from memory. So, like, paying attention to the tiny things and paying attention to something that is small and precious. Sometimes things that you don't know what it is, but it's precious to you. And you take care of it, you listen, you pay attention. I think that's nice.
And you already mentioned that you also are dancing. I want to know the story about your dancing. When did you start? And I mean, I know that we probably should put that also in the show notes, because there's a piece where you combined it now. It's your piece and you're dancing to it. And it's as I mentioned, very, very fine, very delicate. How did you find your way into dancing?
Dancing was always there before the music was. So in some way, I feel like, yeah, even before I was a musician, I was already a dancer. I started when I was 3 years old, going to ballet classes and stuff like that. And I did it all the way until I was 19, 20. At which point I went into the scholars program at Singapore Dance Theatre, where then I also had a bit of exposure to contemporary dance. So it also came quite late stuff with contemporary dance. Yeah, so somehow my way to music, I feel like it was always through dance. There are so many things that dance gave me, like rhythm, tempo, meter. These are things that I never had to learn. They were inside my body already as I started to learn music. And it's really a wonderful thing, because I can trust it intuitively, and I don't really have to, I don't know, put so much of a distance to analyze it accurately. Yeah, so I think this relationship of dance and music is something very close to me, and both of them are very close to me. And so then when I finally, I knew that I wanted to make a piece for music and dance someday. Because if I'm honest, I haven't really seen so many satisfactory combinations of the two. And I'm also speaking about like the Nutcracker by Tchaikovsky and whatever you see on stage, or Swan Lake, or the famous ballets, or even new works. It's always like the two are in an unhappy relationship or unhappy marriage. They don't have the same goals. They are not going in the same direction. And either the music or dance is getting what they want, and the other party is not really happy. So I don't know.
I find that very interesting. That I mean, and I think it's great that you have both in you, because I have done, like other artists too, project, interdisciplinary project, where you put two genres together, and it always, in the preparation or when you think out a program, it makes me so happy and like, oh yes, let's do this with this dance choreographer or this. But then often when you do it, you find out that the approaches are so different, and oftentimes I'm not sure if all sides are then really satisfied. And And this is why I also know that some of the composers who I work who also do like music theater, some of them in the end end up writing the libretto themselves. Some of them end up directing, not because they thought I'm the greatest director, but they're like, somehow people don't understand what I really want to bring across. So they do it themselves, or some of them, like Helmut Oehring, they at some time, I mean, he's been on this in this business for a while, but he has a team who he has been working for many years. And when he then whatever gets hired by a theater, he comes with his team because he says they know, I've been working with them for, I don't know, 20 years. They know what I want. And so, yeah, this is a very crucial point. In a way, also very sad, because in the beginning, everybody's so excited. Yeah, let's do this together. And then it's like, okay, did it really work? And you now have the chance to really put it together, your aesthetics, your movement and everything.
Yeah.
You probably even could choreograph someone, I assume, right? That they move how you want it? Or do you think you just can do it yourself?
I'm not there yet and I haven't tried. I would be really excited to try. Yeah, I've also seen performances where, you know, it's like music and dance and it's going to be cool, it's going to be great. But I leave the performance feeling that, yeah, it was music and it was dance. But the two, to be honest, didn't really speak to one another, or they didn't, at the end, they still don't understand one another. And yeah, I also understand that about, you know, not being able to somehow communicate whatever you're looking for to others. I think it's a tricky process, especially if you're doing something new. Sometimes it's also not clear to yourself what you are doing. It becomes clear in, I don't know, 5 years, and you understand whatever you did 5 years ago much better. And it's hard to communicate that in the moment. I think it also requires a lot of listening, maybe not just to the words, but to the zin, how do you say this, the sense of whatever is being communicated.
Mm. Yeah, it's an interesting gap, maybe, because a few years ago, there was a dance company, and they had this great idea that, I think they had some music which was electronic, but she wanted to have a live singer as well. And I was supposed to improvise. And so I came to this rehearsal and I watched what they were doing. And then I offered something. And at first I went, what I thought was musical. I watched them really closely and I kind of tried to match that or mirror that. And I found that really exciting. But then the woman of this company, she didn't like it at all. She's like, you have to go against it. They can dance what they want. You have to go against it. Emphasize it more. And so then I just did what I wanted. But for me, Irene, I mean, she liked it, but I didn't like it because I had the feeling I had nothing to do with the dance anymore. And so I'm like, okay, I don't get this concept here, but well.
I think that there remains a lot of work to be done here because it's, for instance, not very fun for either party when they are just ignoring one another. But at the same time, it's also not fun to be just mirroring every single thing. I think in my piece, it's a bit like that, that the case is such that the music provides the dance with a nice context, and the dance accentuates or highlights the music, and it's not always like one-to-one,
mm-hmm.
not always moving together. Sometimes they move differently, but they are still really close to one another. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I think it's also good that you can play with it. And I also remember when I was at SMU, because we had a like an arts school, and so we had everything under the roof. There were the actors, the dancers, the artists, the musicians. And when I saw the dancers learn their stuff, I found it fascinating. They had like kind of rhythm classes. They were just counting. They knew like, okay, I do this 16 beats, but they didn't care about the music. They were just counting and having it in their body. And I was already back then like, huh? They don't hear to the music. I mean, I would then like, okay, there's something going high or da 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 da. And so I realized already, I wouldn't say this about any dances, but that they're really learning music very differently.
Yeah, my professor also mentioned this once. Johannes Schallhorn, he has worked with some dancers before, and he has said that it's not like they don't count, but they count differently, or somehow they understand it differently. And I thought about this a lot myself too. I like to think about it sometimes a bit like physicists and footballers. They both understand gravity, but in very different ways. Like the physicist understands gravity from the theoretical standpoint, but I don't know if you throw him a ball, he may or may not catch it. As a footballer, he or she, without understanding any of the theoretical frameworks, if a ball is thrown and this footballer, 100% they are going to get it. And maybe it's also like this with dancers and musicians and rhythm and counting. I guess it's whether it's in your conscious mind or maybe somewhere subconscious where you just react. I don't know.
And when you, I mean, since you also have this body awareness, so can you, do you think you also feel better with musicians or when they play the instrument or the singers that you kind of feel with me what I'm doing or?
I think so, yes. I think so. Sometimes it's important also for me to, I don't know. It's always difficult to communicate exactly what you want. And sometimes you rely on things like metaphors or images. But sometimes you also need to give very, very concrete feedback. So I had one of these pieces, the one that was played in France last year. There's a section of the piece where the violinist has to do a glissando on a harmonic, one semitone for 4 minutes. So it's extremely slow and very difficult. And I had to kind of think of what does it feel like to be like that? And my advice to the musician then was to not to think too much of controlling it, but to still breathe, and then you will move rather than trying to control it, and then you're going to creep and stuff.
Did it help? Did the violinist could she take it?
Yes, I think so. I think it helped.
Yeah, that's always good how you, I mean, I think that's also an art for itself, how composers approach the musicians. And I mean, you can do it in a way that the musicians or interpreters are really excited to do it and they feel welcome and open. Okay, I tried once more. Or if you make the musician even more tied and scared with this difficult music. Yeah, that's a hard school, I think.
But I, at the same time, I also learn a lot from them. But then they tell me, no, this doesn't really work, and then we find a solution together.
And when you compose, do you think of dancing or just in this particular piece where you really put it together, or is it always accompanying you?
I didn't realize it until I wrote this piece, but I think it's always there. Because I often ask myself, how is the music moving? Like, is it moving forward? Is it moving backwards? Is it just staying? I don't know. I think subconsciously a lot of these things have to do with movement and space. Because you can speak about these two things also in music, about tempo, about whatever. How you feel in time, space, you know, if it's like all the tones are meshed together in a very small interval, or you have really low notes and really high notes, and you feel like sonic space is huge. I think it has a lot to do with dance. Although my pieces are not always, you know, I only have one piece so far that is for both.
Exciting, but I'm sure probably more will come as well. So, how do you structure your day now? Are you still very structured, or are you just letting go and letting things happen? Do you have a form of time management?
My days are not so structured, actually. So sometimes I have different things that I have to do. I have to go to school, I have appointments, and it's not very structured. What I try to do is to sleep. Like, sleep is so important. If you don't sleep, you can't function. So I try to go to bed by midnight and wake up at whatever, 7 or 8. And I think that helps already to get a lot of things in order. I'm not so good with this, but trying to eat on time is also important. There are days where I wake up late and I eat an early lunch, but then I get hungry like at 4 p.m. or something like that. And that's a bit silly, but that's okay. Because I don't want to schedule my whole life as well. If it's sunny outside, if it's a nice day, I want to be able to go out and take a walk or to enjoy the sun. Or if there's a friend who asks me if I'm free to sit by the river and chat, I want to be able to respond spontaneously as well. But I think despite that, I'm very organized. So I speak about this from the standpoint of somebody who is already quite organized.
Sounds like you have a good balance between
Yeah, I
the
have.
leisure
Yeah.
or where you can be spontaneously and the part where like, okay, I have to do this now.
Yeah, and I mean sometimes I can't go to sleep in peace if I haven't finished, haven't answered some emails. So I try to do that. And yeah, because if you leave things unanswered, then they'll just pile up and get more and more.
And who or what has played the greatest role in shaping you and what inspires you?
That is such a big question. It's so difficult to answer. I can't answer the first question. It's impossible to say the biggest role. I mean, there are so many things that have shaped me. I don't know where to start. I mean, dance has been so important. Growing up in Singapore has been so important in so many ways that I'm only just beginning to understand. I'm sure there's so much more. The teachers that I had and have are always going to be really important to me. I would not be here without them. I don't know. I don't want to list a long things like as if, when you win an award, then you have to thank everybody. I don't know, there are
You
so
thank
so so
everyone.
many things.
Yeah.
Yeah, or do
And
you want
what
to
is.
phrase the question differently, then maybe I could answer it better.
It's totally fine. What does it mean for you to be true to yourself and authentic at this music business and how to keep true to yourself? I mean, it's a big thing and you're young, but I guess you're finding a way around.
Yeah, that's a question for me as well. I think, okay, so a very practical answer first, then to which leads to the artistic side, is I think I try to write pieces slowly, like not produce them or to churn them out. Because if you are writing one piece every month, I think you are going to just go into habits and do the same thing over and over again. And I want to write good pieces. In order to do that, I think I have to take the time. When you take the time to write a piece, and here comes the artistic side, I think that gives you really the chance to be critical with it. Because as composer, it's very difficult to be critical. You have to, at one moment, in the same moment, completely trust yourself and also completely doubt yourself.
Oh.
You can fall in love with something that you write, but at the next moment you have to put a distance between you and that thing and say, is it good? Do I want it? Or are there other ways to do it? And I think this process just needs time. And I think more and more as I compose my pieces and dance my dances and stuff, I feel like I have nothing to prove to anyone. So I don't write music to prove something. Not to anyone. And if I'm able to do that, then I think I'm authentic to myself. But I mean, besides the aesthetic considerations, I also had to do a lot of other work, let's say. I think it's easy with the upbringing that you receive and your education to sometimes conflate and confuse what moral things are and what aesthetic things are. And they are two different things, although maybe kind of a bit related as well. And to be clear on that, I think that helps too.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many important points. I mean, also that you already are at this point that you write it for you and you don't care. I think that's for so many people the hardest point to get at, to forget about the opinions that others have about me. I found that very difficult. And also that you emphasized on this range of trust and doubt, because on one hand it is, I trust myself that I know I can do this, I can sing, I can perform on stage. But as you say, the doubt can bring out something in me and make it better, more beautiful, or whatever. I mean, when I practice every day my music and sing it, there's always this voice in myself. So how can I do it better? What else is possible technically or expression wise? But yeah, if it's not in balance, you know, if I doubt too much, it can get into my way, because then I might not perform because I'm so scared. But maybe if I trust too much that I'm whatever, almost like arrogant or something, then it's also not serving me. And so it's really interesting that you pointed that out, and that in the end, we probably really need both.
I think so. But it's a tricky balance to find. I think also for me, I'm still quite young. And, you know, at the ages when you learn composition or you go to your bachelor's degree, you are like going from a teenager to a young adult. And I think at that age, it's super common to be quite impressionable and to care about what other people think of you. And to a certain extent, it's necessary, right, to fit into society and, you know, to respect other people. So yeah, balance. It's tricky.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it really exists, a perfect balance, but we try.
Yeah, we probably figure it out every day newly.
Yeah. Every day a bit of doubt and a bit of trust.
And in your young age, what do you think of success?
I think you can define it differently. Like, life is not just all music or not just all composition. That would be terrible. So that's just one portion of it. I think what's important for me is what we spoke about previously, to kind of be true to yourself, not just in art, but also in other aspects of life. And besides, you know, maybe success in composing, for me, maybe it's like being able to realize my artistic vision, but also at the same time, having had the artistic freedom to do so. It's also finding people who I connect with, I think, is a really big part of that. But beyond that, also being like a good partner, a good sister, a good friend, important to me. And I think there are small moments of success every day. It's not just what you get when you are 75 years old. And I think I sense that when I sense this sense of peace, and how do you say it? Yeah, really peace, maybe. Just sitting there and feeling like this is good, and I feel at peace with where I am, the work that I do.
Sounds like a fulfilled life.
I don't know, I'm not there.
And is there anything that drives you forward, or do you have a kind of a vision?
I think there are definitely things that drive me forward. Like, if I didn't have hope, I wouldn't be here. I want to be better. And I enjoy the company of people who are also on their different ways. I enjoy the small moments of connection that we have, not necessarily between other composers or musicians and myself, but anyone. I'm really happy when I can help somebody else on their way as well. Like right now, I'm going to be dancing for another two friends, and that's a new chapter for me as well. Trying to help them to realize their own artistic visions. I don't know, these moments of beauty, or, you know, when a piece really touches me deeply, I find that it's a really special moment. makes me really happy in the moment. It makes me happy to be alive. And I kind of want to share that with others if it's possible. So for instance, like I think my mother found it as well when she started learning piano or whoever. Quite optimistic, I think.
Great connection with people. I really enjoyed talking to you. And we're at
I
the
enjoyed
last
speaking to
question.
you too.
Thank you. And my question is, which tip would you like to give other young artists? Since you're a young one yourself, what has helped you the most?
It's difficult to just choose one. If I think about myself and what was the most important for me, I don't know what I would choose. I would say maybe if in doubt, take the risk, especially for music or dance, especially for music. It's just notes. In doubt, take the risk and I don't know, be courageous.
Yeah, it's important. Cool.
I think so.
Well, thank you so much for this great talk with you, and I wish you everything you wish for, and I hope to meet you someday in person.
Thank you very much for having me. It was also so nice to speak to you, and I hope to meet you someday too.
This was the interview from today. I hope that it inspired you, and please send me your emails, send me your feedback, because I love to interact with you. Thank you very much that you tuned in with me today. I really, really hope that you liked it. And please tell your friends and colleagues about this podcast. I thank you very much. I wish you all the best. Live your music, live your life, and see you next time. Yours, Irene.